This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. And this weekend, we're going to highlight a somewhat overlooked aspect of this past week. We started off the week honoring the memory of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., and we'll be hearing from his niece, Alveda King, in just a little bit. And toward the end of the week, we celebrated the unborn with the March for Life. But Tuesday was National Religious Freedom Day, and the Washington Watch live radio program was not only live, but we had a live studio audience present to hear about the important ways that religious freedom is being championed in our nation's capital. And to start off our program today is a familiar voice to our audience, Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma. Senator Lankford serves on several committees, including Appropriations, Homeland Security, and Intelligence. But what you may not know is that he's a former youth pastor and was the director of the largest youth camp in America. Here now is Tony Perkins with Senator James Lankford.
Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Very good to be with you. Obviously been on Washington Watch multiple times, never with a live studio audience. This is a great interaction
point. Well, it's actually good to see you and not just hear you.
Typically on the phone with you, that's correct.
That is right. Let me just start with this by asking you the question, what is the state of religious freedom in America today?
It's a really odd season for us. Religious liberty and religious freedom and the free expression of your faith has been a given throughout American history. And now for some reason, people of our country and in this cultural time are becoming afraid of faith and afraid of people of faith. And so there's this work to be able to quiet in the belief that somehow the separation of church and state, coming from another letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote, clearly not in our Constitution, but another letter that he wrote to the Danbury Baptist Association, this wall of separation, people are trying to put that up and to say, if you're going to have faith, that's fine to have it, but you need to have it in your church, right, by yourself, with your family. Don't bring it to your work. Don't bring it out in conversation. Clearly don't bring it out in the public arena. That was never the intention of the protection of faith in our country. We have always been a nation that you could not only have a faith, but you could live your faith. And that's dwindling away at this point as people are becoming afraid of people of faith.
Well, the logical conclusion of that line of thinking or reasoning or lack thereof would be that people of faith could not be motivated by that faith to make a difference with that faith,
right,
which, quite frankly, you and the conversations that you and I have had over the years is why you're in Congress.
It's a really stark back-to-back in this particular week to have Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and their recognition now 50 years since he was assassinated, as a pastor, as an outspoken rights activist, as one who spoke on the issues of poverty and of equality and of tearing down racial barriers, clearly from a faith perspective. And he's respected by all individuals within our nation today. And then right after that, a day recognizing religious liberty in our nation and saying, why would we not allow people of faith to participate? There have been earth-shattering individuals like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. who brought his faith into the public arena and challenged America by saying, hate doesn't overcome faith, love does. Well, where did he get that? He got that from Scripture and from his own personal faith, and that bubbled out and has transformed our culture in many ways, and we're all grateful for that. We should continue to allow people of faith to be able to live out the expression of their faith and not be afraid of that.
Senator Lankford, today President Trump issued a proclamation declaring today as Religious Freedom Day. And in that proclamation, he said, our Constitution and laws guarantee Americans the right not just to believe as they see fit, but to freely exercise their religion, something you referred to earlier, not just to believe, but act upon those beliefs. And he went on to say, quote, no American, whether a nun, nurse, baker, or business owner, should be forced to choose between the tenets of faith or adherence to the law.
Yeah. No. Again, this goes back to the basic principle. In America, it's not just that you can have a faith, it's that you can actually live the tenets of your faith. And one of the challenges that I talk to people about within the church is not the challenge of the church not able to live the faith, it's that individuals within the church are truly not living their faith outside of their church. The more that we practice integrity and that we practice the basic tenets of our faith, whether we're at home, whether in a business place, whether in recreation, we show a consistency of that faith. And people don't see one person at church and another person at the business,
right,
but they really see faith lived out, that's where faith makes a difference. As I poke people often and say, if church and faith is only something you do on a weekend, that's not a faith, that's a hobby. A hobby is something you do on weekends. A faith permeates everything that you do. And so when people live their faith as it is actually their faith rather than just a hobby they do occasionally, it has an impact in our culture.
And I think that thinking is dangerous when you look at, here's one's personal life, one's public life, right. And there's this dichotomous view that the two do not intersect. It's hard to determine where someone's going to land if they're operating out of these two different worldviews.
Yeah, and I've had folks that have even poked me before. They've said, you know, you were 22 years in ministry before, but now you're an elected official, so you need to set that aside. And I've smiled at them and said, not only does Article 6 of the Constitution mean I don't have to do that, which is specifically written towards elected officials, protecting and living their faith, the First Amendment clearly does that. But quite frankly, it's one of our great frustration with people that when they're elected, they become something different. If right. I was a person of faith Absolutely. At home, I should still be a person of faith here as well. Otherwise, I become something that I'm not.
Right, because people vote for you, elect you based on who you are,
right.
not what you are forced to conform based upon the politically correct standards of Washington, D.C.
Right.
Now, let me address this, or let you address this, Senator Lankford. The issue of religious freedom, while it's sometimes thought to be a partisan issue, it is a bipartisan issue. In fact, you have recently introduced legislation with both Republicans and Democrats to uphold this important principle of religious freedom.
It is, actually. And there are multiple places that we've seen that. And over the course of the history of our country, we've not seen religious liberty be a partisan issue. Go back 3 years ago, and we were dealing with trade agreements with Vietnam and other countries. I thought it was exceptionally important that if we're going to be in a trade conversation with Vietnam, we need to first bring up the issue of human rights, human dignity, and religious freedom. Vietnam has been a serial abuser of people and religious liberty. So I brought up a very clear principle. If we're going to have any trade agreement with Vietnam, we need to first deal with the issue of religious liberty first and to put that in a standard in our trade negotiations. That passed with a bipartisan, overwhelming, unanimous vote that wasn't seen as a partisan issue to say we should lead with that. If there's any piece of leverage we're going to have on a country like Vietnam to say you need right. to change your human rights principles and your issues of religious liberty, trade should be one of those issues that we use as a leverage. We had bipartisan agreement. We have other examples of that. Frank Wolf has led for so many years in this area in the past, being able to focus and build bipartisan agreements on the issue of religious liberty. We should continue to keep it that way. Again, in our country, for each individual living their faith out, it shouldn't scare someone that I live my faith out and someone who has a different faith is right next to me. As a government, we protect all of those individuals to be able to live out the tenets of their faith. The government shouldn't be partial in choosing one or the other. Neither should we restrict someone. And if you're confident in your faith, why would it intimidate you that the person next to you lives a different one? Live out the principles of your faith and let it make a difference.
Agreed. And these examples that you have given also speak back to what the United States provided in terms of leadership back to the United Nations in 1948. I mean, this is one area where the United Nations has actually gotten it right with their 1948 Declaration of Human Rights, in which they recognize that religious freedom is not an idea just for the Western world. It is a human right that was driven by the leadership of the United States. And I'm hopeful, and I want to ask you if you are, that America is going to restore its leadership position on religious liberty worldwide.
Yeah, I believe we can and we should. This goes back to Reagan's principle of being a city on a hill. There are people around the world that want to be able to just live out the tenets of their faith, that they live in a country that doesn't allow them to have a different faith or has a different perspective and doesn't allow them to have faith at all. We lose track of how different the American experiment still is about allowing people to be able to have a faith and to live it even in greater diversity. Most countries of the world are not like that. We're at our best when we're promoting that. Sam Brownback, who's governor of Kansas, is going through the process right now to be selected as the ambassador at large for religious liberty. It's exceptionally important that he passes through the Senate. Our push is to get him through next week so he can get on the task. So he's working with every embassy in the world to say to every embassy in every location, whether you're Saudi Arabia or whether you're Canada, to say this issue of religious liberty should be a part of the conversation. We're modeling it. We need to set the example for that in America and then help push other nations to consider it within their own nation.
We're going to talk more about that in a moment with Congressman Frank Wolf. Senator, thanks so much for joining us today. Thank you for all that you do on Capitol Hill, leading in the Senate on the values issues, but most importantly, as we recognize today, religious liberty.
Yeah, thanks for taking the lead on this publicly as well, Tony.
You can find out more about Senator Lankford when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, I want to invite you to be a part of keeping Washington Watch on the air by going to TonyPerkins.com and giving a tax-deductible donation. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with a great voice for the unborn and religious freedom, Dr. Alveda King.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. This is because transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. Yet even the federal government has stated that there is no evidence that gender reassignment surgery has improved health outcomes. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. If you were watching the news earlier this week, you probably saw our next guest a number of times. She's the niece of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., but she's also an advocate for life and the religious freedom of all people. Dr. Alveda King is the director of the organization Civil Rights for the Unborn, as well as the pastoral associate for Priests for Life. Here now is Tony Perkins with Dr. Alveda King.
Alveda, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello. I don't know if you can hear me. I'm in an airport. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Alveda. So good to have you with us today. I thank you for taking time. I know you're on your way to Washington to be a part of a number of the pro-life events today. Let me ask you, we've discussed this briefly, but the connection between the civil rights movement and religious freedom.
Tony, when we consider religious freedom in the 20th century, of course, I actually marched for open housing, went to jail with many of the leaders. A few of us are still here today. My uncle led that movement, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Uncle M.L., and my daddy, Reverend A.G. King. Now, we were not at that time fighting for religious freedom. For most of the movement, we still had prayer in schools, although it was taken out in 1963. Abortion did not become legal until 1973. So we had a climate where we could pray in the public square and appeal to God, to preach in the pulpits about the Bible and sin. We were dealing with skin color racism, which is a problem based upon the misconception. I'm so sorry about that. Please, sorry about that.
You go right ahead.
But dealing with the skin color issues, thinking we're separate races, whereas the Act 1726 says we're created of one blood. But we were not fighting over the Bible and preaching the gospel so much at that time. I believe, remember when Family Research Council was one of the first louder voices saying, something's wrong in America. They're taking away the 501c3s. They're trying to keep the preachers from preaching the truth of the gospel inside the four walls and out. So I'm so glad that alarm was continually sounded, and that many of us, Priests for Life including, we have fought for religious freedom on the matter of preaching the truth about abortion. And we had that lawsuit where we prevailed along with the Little Sisters of the Poor and others. So there is a correlation between civil rights and religious rights and religious freedom. We're not trying to keep others from practicing their beliefs, but we want to be able to practice ours.
Well, you have been such an effective advocate for the unborn. That comes out of your conviction, both your personal experience, but also your religious conviction. And you should not be deprived of that conviction when you walk into the public square.
When we are denied the opportunity and the right to proclaim the gospel freely in this nation that was founded upon in our Constitution, we have that right. It's a terrible injustice. My uncle did say injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And I know we can all agree. So it's wrong to take the life of a baby in the womb. It's wrong to silence the voices of people who want to proclaim our faith. And all of those are civil rights injustices, but they are an injustice against God's will. And so I'm very grateful that this type of information conversation is available. And so we must continue to cry out.
Well, Dr. Avita King, thank you so much for taking a few moments to join us. We look forward to seeing you this week here in Washington, D.C., as we march for the unborn and for the right to life. And I just want to say thank you for all that you have done to stand up and be a voice to all of the nation. And you bring such credibility because of who you are and the family that you come from. And we're grateful for you, Dr. Avita King.
Thank you for this opportunity. God bless everyone.
All right. Dr. Avita King.
If you want to find out more about Avita King, just head on over to tonyperkins.com and follow the links. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, and you can donate when you visit tonyperkins.com. We'll be back with creative genius Ryan Baumberger.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Tony Perkins wrote a book highlighting young people whose stories of taking a stand for Christ in the culture has inspired thousands. And joining him in the studio on Tuesday for our last segment was one of those who took a stand. Ryan Baumberger is the chief creative officer at the Radiance Foundation, and Tony describes Ryan as the most creative person he knows. Here's Tony Perkins.
Ryan, it's great to see you. Great to be back on, to have you back on the program.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for the compliments. You build up my self-esteem. Thanks.
Well, look, I don't know that I need to build you. In fact, by the way, I actually write about Ryan in the book No Fear, Tell Your Story. So if you want to hear all of the story, he's not going to be able to get to it in this last segment of the program, but you can read about it in the book No Fear. But religious freedom and your faith plays a key part in what you do.
It does. I mean, entirely. I, as a Christian, as someone who grew up in a small little family of 15, in a Christian home.
Let's talk about that, because it's very important for people to know. Your mother was, your biological mother was raped, and yet went through the 9 months of pregnancy, gave birth to you. You were adopted into a biracial family with 15, you had 15 of you. There.
Yeah, it's just 15. Yeah, 13 kids, 10 of us were adopted.
What kind of vehicle did y'all get around in?
A maxi van, it was actually called.
Okay.
Or a club wagon. There was no such thing as a minivan. That wouldn't have fit all of us.
I threatened to buy my wife a school bus when we had our fifth, but she didn't like the idea.
Yeah. It doesn't maneuver around so well.
Yeah.
But we all fit, and you know, I had parents who weren't afraid to express their faith, and more importantly, weren't afraid to live it out. And they did that, not just in home, because they were the same people at home that they were in the workplace. They own a store, a retail store, and they lived out their faith in the store. So I grew up witnessing that and understanding that there isn't this separation, there isn't this dichotomy that so many of us want to actually impose upon ourselves.
So what propelled you to step into the public arena in a very effective way. But in taking on, I mean, in the book, I tell the story about how the NAACP came after you because you challenged the fact that they were promoting the abortion of black children. That's not like a little organization that you took.
No, on. Not at all. I mean, I parodied their name. I called them the National Association for the Abortion of Colored People, and for some reason they didn't like it. But that was such a wake-up call to me, though. I mean, obviously it was a free speech issue, and it reminded me, too, just of religious liberty. What good is religious liberty if we're silent? What good is that freedom if we're complacent? And I've just never been the kind of person to just kind of sit back and watch things just unfold or be okay with the status quo. So that was part of the reason why my wife Bethany and I co-founded the Radiance Foundation, but why we felt like we had to get more involved in this fight, because although a lot of these things seem to be happening beneath the surface, there is a lot of erosion that's happening to our First Amendment right. And when I think about it, you know, without religious freedom, America no longer matters. Without life, nothing else matters. So for me, those two issues, religious freedom and, of course, the right to life. Without life, you don't obviously have to worry about religious freedom. But those two go hand in hand, and that's why the Radiance Foundation really see these things as so imperative and why we have to fight for both.
What has been your experience? I mean, you're young. You've been on the national stage now. Well, I mean, you're younger than me. Some of my staff is laughing. Don't laugh. But I mean, have you been a little surprised at what you've seen on the national stage when it comes to the lack of courage and boldness that Congressman Frank Wolf spoke of?
Oh man! And first of all, I am just a fan. Oh my goodness, you just are on fire, Congressman Wolf. If we had more Christian Americans who actually cared enough, I mean, this is when you read, a letter from a Birmingham jail from Martin Luther King Jr. He was talking about all the complacency of the church. There was no excuse for people to be complacent, and today there is no excuse for the church to be complacent. We have more access to information than we've ever had before in human history. So it's not like we don't know or that we can't find out what's going on, but it's that complacency, which I understand it from those who perhaps don't know the Lord, for those who don't have any kind of religious upbringing or religious foundation. But for Christians, there's no excuse. This kind of apathy can't be justified at all.
I think it goes back to a lack of courage. And there's a fear. And that's obviously why I wrote the book, No Fear, because those who are willing to stand up, and the book is primarily about millennials, younger people. You were an exception. But the fact that when we have that relationship with God and we understand that we're here for a higher purpose and that life has meaning when we are willing to lay our lives down. And that means even on social media, some people are afraid to have people post negative things about them. When people are literally dying for their faith in countries not that far from here, I mean, there is no excuse for a lack of courage and boldness.
There's not. I mean, if you're afraid of being virtually unfriended, perhaps you need to reassess your priorities in life. It's really tragic because it's that complacency, it's that lack of courage that to me is antithetical to Christianity. I mean, at the heart of Christianity is self-sacrifice. Self-sacrifice unleashes purpose. And when we're courageous, we enable opportunities to happen that allow others to be set free. And so we just need a lot more people, young, old, and all those of us in between, to rise up and be courageous. Yeah, it may be uncomfortable, or it may be painful, or none of that matters, because if we're not willing to speak up, if we're not willing to stand up, then we allow this total erosion of freedom and this oppression to sink in, and for that to become the norm.
Now, I want to be very candid. It can be difficult to stand up. It can be challenging. You went through that. You were challenged as you took on the NAACP. They took you to court. They tried to break you, and it was difficult, but you stood, and you ultimately prevailed.
But you know what? When I think of the ultimate sacrifice, Christ gave his life for us, and there are people literally dying around the world. I mean, just trying to—hiding Bibles. I mean, we can't even, so many of us can't even understand the kind of persecution and the oppression that happened. So yes, it's going to be uncomfortable, but I will say what I went through is really nothing compared to what many Christians around the world go through. And so, I mean, we're told not to fear. Scripture tells us not to have a spirit of fear. Be bold and courageous. And what that might look like for one person may be completely different for the next, but we have to be willing to sacrifice. We really do. We have a culture that is in desperate need to understand what gives it purpose, and it's certainly not binge watching on Hulu or whatever else. We have purpose given to us by the Creator, and I just pray, like Congressman Wolf said, we have to pray. How can we get involved? How can we step up our involvement and be courageous?
You know, that, Ryan, that is a great place to really kind of begin to wind this down as we about to conclude this special edition of Washington Watch, to actually just ask Christians, believers, pastors, just as Ryan just said, ask, what would you have me do? But then the key to that is being willing to be obedient. And when the Lord answers that question, when the Holy Spirit leads and the door opens, you've got to be willing to walk through it and make a difference. This is a time for men and women of conviction and of courage. This freedom that we enjoy in this country, religious freedom, yes, it's essential. Yes, it's foundational, but it can also be lost. Ronald Reagan said it's just one generation away. And these freedoms, if you and I will exercise them and use them, people in faraway places will enjoy them as a result of our willingness and our conviction to stand up. Ryan Bomberger, thank you so much for being with us today, and thank you again for the great work you do on behalf of all Americans, but in speaking for the unborn.
It's great to be here. Thanks, Tony.
If you want to find out more about Ryan, the Radiance Foundation, or Tony's book, No Fear, Real Stories of a Courageous New Generation Standing for Truth, head on over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to TonyPerkins.com and clicking on the donate button. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.